It's mind-blowing how quickly the narratives are changing, right? Like, just as soon as we were ready to crown Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and just, like, place them in the finals, now last night everybody's rushing back to, like, the Golden State can do it, and then it's the most Golden State thing ever if they win this series. And now, on top of it, the most interesting thing to me is just basically the open disdain from Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook towards Steph Curry.
It just seems like he does not get the level of respect that he should from the current stars. I don't think, like, LeBron and KD and Russ look at him and are that impressed, which is kind of crazy to me after the last 2 years. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line I've got Ben Golliver. Ben, what's going on, man?
Not too much, but also so much. I feel like it's been a really long time since we talked.
I know. It's been too long, and we're both on the West Coast right now.
Which is good, probably. I won't be for long. I'm dealing with travel madness, trying to get back to Oklahoma City. It's Friday between Game 5 and 6 of the Western Conference Finals. But yeah, since the last time we talked, I spent like a solid week in Oklahoma City. I'm really loving life.
Just posted up at the Banjo Museum.
Okay, so I didn't make it to the Banjo Museum yet because the Thunder...
Oh, come on, man. That was your only job for the pod.
Hold on, though, because the Thunder have been playing so well, so I knew I didn't want to burn it. You know, I got like a whole week and a half.
You'd have plenty of time for the Banjo Museum. I mean, I like it.
When we get the Thunder-Cavaliers finals, there's going to be plenty of time for banjos, plenty of time for the Rock and Roll Museum. I'm going to have it covered on both sides. But what I did, I actually had two experiences in Oklahoma City.
Okay.
The first one was at, well, have you ever been to Cracker Barrel?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think a lot of people have. I hadn't, so it was a little bit of a fish out of water experience for me. So I've been a vegetarian by choice, not by principle, for like the last, you know, year and a half. So I go into the...
Yeah, That's a topic that we're going to delve into in the off season, because I'm curious as to how you got there.
No, you basically just try not to be a fat ass, but
okay,
it's as simple as that. But anyway, so I go to Cracker Barrel. I'm like looking at the menu, and first of all, when you walk into Cracker Barrel, they're already selling you, you know, rocking chairs for your porch, like on the front. So you just know it's a weird place, like right off the top.
Right.
And then there's a whole store of like knickknacks and goodies you have to go through. So I finally figured out where they actually serve the food. And it was basically just like a cafeteria. So I go through the entire menu. Menu's like 17 pages long. You know, really, basically, it's like a last 2 minute report during a Thunder game.
Yeah. Yeah, they make everything.
But they make everything with meat. That's the problem. So I end up finding the one thing that has no meat. It's called the vegetable plate. So this is what the vegetable plate is at the Cracker Barrel in Oklahoma City. We've got steak fries. We've got mashed potatoes and gravy. We've got dumplings. And we've got cheese grits. That is the vegetable plate.
And listen, what you're saying is explaining why I love Cracker Barrel.
Yeah, no, and people loved it. So first of all, I also tried to explain the fact that I was vegetarian to the waitress. I don't think that she had ever heard of the concept.
I don't think vegetarians don't really exist in Oklahoma.
So that was my one story. My second story was I went to Boot Barn. Have you ever been to Boot Barn?
No.
Well, as the name suggests, it's a barn where they sell a crap load of boots. I mean, I'm talking hundreds of boots. It's like, basically...
Are you going to have boots for the finals?
Okay, so I don't have any boots, right? But I did take some pretty phenomenal pictures that I'm going to include in my, you know, my annual, like, playoff diary, where I kind of have photo diaries. But I'm just going to tell you some of these slogans, and you tell me if you're with it. So there's a guy sleeping on a couch. He's covered in AK-47s, and the t-shirt reads... Freedom blanket because America.
Oh my God. Wow.
And then we've got, these are front porch signs that you could have. The best things in life either make you drunk, fat, or pregnant. That one's, I guess, more towards a female audience.
Right.
And we got another one that says, life's better with a cowboy. Live right, ride hard, roll in the hay.
You can be that cowboy. You just need to get the boots, man.
The coolest thing that I found, though, was a collection of colored shotgun shells that you actually, when you took them out of the packaging, it turns into an American flag. So, like, you have an American flag, but it's shotgun shells.
Dude, you don't even need the Banjo Museum. You've gotten your Oklahoma experience. Cracker Barrel and the Boot Barn.
And
I'm so proud.
I also saw two wild turtles at the only wildlife refuge in the city.
Nice. All right. So a couple of Oklahoma turtles.
None of this has anything to do with basketball, but that was basically my week summed up in Oklahoma City. And by the way, Oklahoma City, everyone's super nice. It is like people you probably read in Lee Jenkins's thing on Kevin Durant. Like, it's definitely a growing city. You feel it. There's more energy. They've got a little downtown district that's trying to be, you know, more like not hipstery really, but just kind of trendy. They've got the Whole Foods going on. So there's, I mean, I probably went to the bottom of the barrel, the bottom of the Cracker Barrel.
I've heard that it's cool. I'm also glad to know that it's still Oklahoma, which is great. And I'm currently in Seattle for my bachelor party this weekend.
Are you surveying all the Sonics fans?
The Sonics fans, it's going to be interesting on Saturday night because people here hate the Thunder. So we've got that to look forward to. And I've also another thing, we've got a lot of things on the agenda this weekend. However, one of them is, so some of my friends here know, Isaiah Thomas, and, Isaiah is having a celebrity basketball like weekend that he's called, that's called the Zeekend.
Of course.
And so I think I'm going to try and check that out this weekend and I'll report back next week.
Are you playing in it?
I hope so. I hope I get grandfathered in. I think Evan Turner's going to be there. It should be a pretty fun group. We've started with 5 minutes of nonsense, but, this has been one of the craziest weeks I can remember as a basketball fan.
It's mind-blowing how quickly the narratives are changing, right? Like, just as soon as we were ready to crown Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and just, like, place them in the finals, now last night everybody's rushing back to, like, the Golden State can do it, and then it's the most Golden State thing ever if they win this series. And now, on top of it, the most interesting thing to me is just basically the open disdain from Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook towards Steph Curry. I mean, you had to see that press conference, right? That was crazy.
I did see it. And I mean, what do you think about the way that the rest of the NBA views Steph? I had talked about it with some of the, I was on a Ringer pod last week, and I don't know, man, it just seems like he does not get the level of respect that he should from the current stars. Like, there's been all sorts of shit where like Oscar Robertson comes out and criticizes him. And basically there's been like a new old timer every couple of weeks who says that Steph couldn't have done this 25 years ago. But, and that's like a whole separate thing, but it's different. I don't think like LeBron and KD and Russ look at him and are that impressed, which is kind of crazy to me after the last 2 years.
I completely agree. And even before this press conference, I got a lot of attention about Steph's defense. You go back to right after game two when Steph flew into the crowd, and the day after practice in Oklahoma City, you know, Kevin Durant was asked about it, and he kind of threw a little dig in at that practice too. It didn't get really widely reported, I don't think, but he basically just said like Steph didn't even need to jump into the crowd. It just looks cool when you do that. Like, almost like, you know, calling him out for fake hustle. And so like,
to be fair to KD, I think everyone at home was watching Steph jump into the crowd being like, what the hell are you doing?
No, I agree. But
like, I think we were all just worried though.
I'm just saying, would you expect Kevin Durant to say that about LeBron James? Would LeBron James say that about Kevin Durant?
Yeah.
Would either one of them say it about Westbrook? No, it's all assumed because those guys are just these complete competitive maniacs, right? So when, you know, little Steph Curry, I think that's kind of how they view him. And I also think that they think he's the golden boy. You know, the media never says anything bad about him, so they almost kind of have to take a harder line.
Yeah. And to give another example, I think Durant is a great example. His defense has never, I mean, he's stepped it up for the past like 3 weeks, but his defense has never been great. And I think that's where Steph is. He's kind of a net zero on defense. and guarding Westbrook, he doesn't have a chance, which is true of most everybody. But at the same time, I mean, you look at guys like Russell Westbrook, obviously, and Damian Lillard, like neither one of them play any defense either.
Yeah, so I went through the numbers, and I think the most important thing to know about Steph's defense is that it's just vastly improved from earlier in his career. You know, they made a big deal locally about how much work he's put in on the defensive end, and their defensive ratings bear it out. I mean, he's gone from atrocious to pretty good, and then in the last 2 years, to solid. And when you look at his defensive real plus minus, I think he ranked seventh in the regular season this year among point guards, actually a spot higher than Westbrook. And then if you look at just the on-off ratings in general, I mean, he is part of really, really strong defensive units. And it's hard to do that if you're just terrible, right? Like, you have to be at least passable. So I would actually give him a little bit better than net zero. I would say he's, you know, above average, especially compared to other superstar point guards. I think a big part of it, though, that does help, which isn't exactly what Kevin Durant said, but, you know, he mentioned how Curry's able to kind of rest off the ball and doesn't always take the big assignments. I think another part of it is that Golden State manages their minutes during the regular season, and that helps a lot too, right? I mean, if you're not if you're not playing 40 plus minutes of defense, you know, you're going to look better on the possessions that matter. But some of it, to me, it's almost like a difference of philosophy, right? I think Westbrook and Durant, they're older school guys. I mean, they're used to playing these huge minutes. They're used to putting the entire load on their backs. They're not used to this, you know, Warriors Spurs type approach where, you know, everybody kind of shares the burden. And they almost look at that like they should be getting credit for it. It was kind of what I was reading between the lines, weren't you? It's like, wait a minute, Westbrook guards Curry all the time. Give him the credit. We're out here playing 40 plus minutes and carrying this team by ourselves. Give us the credit. Don't give Curry all this credit.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I saw that quote last night and I got really excited, because I feel like that's been sort of the subtext of this series and maybe the season, and the way some of these superstars look at Steph. And now it's all out in the open, man. It's like game six of Saturday night. Everyone knows that this is how both sides feel. And here we go. It's like, this is as good as the playoffs get. There's egos on the line. There's history in play for both sides. And, I don't know. I'm pretty fired up.
Yeah. The other thing too is, you know, the asterisk that people were trying to put on the Warriors, not really many people did, but, oh, who'd they beat last year? Because all these teams were injured, right? Well, the one team that was super injured last year was the Thunder, who never got a crack at them, right?
So totally.
I actually think that asterisk is sort of Oklahoma City's mentality. They're just
believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. These guys didn't beat us, so why do we need to fear them? Why do we need to show them respect? And, you know, Steph getting back-to-back MVPs when both Durant and Westbrook were legitimate candidates this year, I think that is a part of it. You know, Durant, you know, all NBA second team, you know, in the morning. I think that's a part of it.
So, and what I love about these playoffs is, I mean, over the past 18 months, I've become a full on Steph Curry believer. And, I mean, I think that if you take just this 2 year span, he's playing on a Jordan Larry Bird type level. And, he's as good as anyone we've seen. However, with all that comes all kinds of worship from the mainstream media and from, I mean, he's arguably the most popular athlete in America right now. And he deserves all that, but I like that he's going to have to prove it. I mean, basically coming back down from 3-1 against this Thunder team is as insane a challenge as we could have imagined. And then if he were to win, he would have to go through LeBron and the Cavs, who are clicking right now. So, I mean, like if Steph is going to become the guy in like American sports, he's going to have to earn it, which is cool. I think that's better than what we had last year.
Totally agree. And I also think that part of what Westbrook and Durant are coming from, you know, in response to that question is just sort of like, we just smoked this guy off the court twice in a row at home.
Yeah, you can tell they're confident, man.
And we're going back home and we just pushed him really hard in game five. I thought the Thunder played really well in game five, even though they didn't win. You know, not a lot was really working for them, but both Durant and Westbrook were unbelievable. Right. And they're completely in the zone and confident at this point. And then they're going back to Oklahoma City, where that building, you know, I don't even know what to compare it to, like House of Horrors or like Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. Like, it's a different world where Dion Waiters can be a really, really strong player. Robertson can all of a sudden be this like career night guy who delivers a big,
I'm not buying into Robertson yet.
Really?
I'm going to need a couple more weeks of this before he's still the guy you leave alone. I don't know. I feel like after game four, a lot of people did this shift where it was like Billy Donovan has figured out how to use Robertson, and I'm just not there yet.
Yeah, well, he definitely used him better than he'd ever had previously, and I think some of it, you know, he's clearly feeding off of their stars, right? Everything's starting with what Westbrook and Durant are doing. And, you know, if he goes off one night, we don't want to crown a guy off a career night, but that was one heck of a performance. He had to be a lot more active. That's when he was at his best. You know, standing in the corner and waiting just allows that defense to load up on the other guys. When he's cutting, when he's moving, when he's finding seams, he can be pretty effective. And, you know, it is a gamble because he's not really that guy. Like, he's not the number three scorer who's going to be able to kind of feast in those situations. He's still five guy, but as long as he's doing something.
He looked like James Posey for a couple of games there where he's fantastic on defense. And then he hit just enough big shots to sort of extend the Warriors defense. And I just don't think he's going to be James Posey over a longer set of games.
Yeah, I hear you. But I think they just need him to be functional.
They just need one more. Right.
They just need him to be functional, because we see what happens as soon as they only have four options on the court. Things get a lot harder, and that's kind of how it was at Oracle. I thought in game four, they just never, like, all those supporting guys just kind of like slowly disappeared one by one. Like, Cantor couldn't stay on the court, so he was out of there. Waiters, I think he went scoreless or didn't make a field goal, and he's wild going to the basket, so he kind of falls out of there. Robertson had a couple shots, but it was all from the perimeter. He wasn't doing anything going to the basket because Golden State's interior defense was so good. So now he's kind of falling by the wayside. And, you know, Adams had foul trouble, so he falls by the wayside. So, you know, that 2-on-5 approach, like we talked about entering the series, that wasn't going to be quite enough. They just need those supporting guys. And I think in that building, though, I mean, it's just a different world. Those guys are so comfortable, so confident. I mean, Waiters is running around pounding his chest. The crowd loves him. And the other thing, too, about Robertson is the crowd there is really smart. So they give him basically a standing ovation every time he hits a jumper. Like, imagine if you were a poor shooter and that was how people reacted. Like, that's pretty confidence building. You know?
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's definitely, and people around the team seem to really like him. So I mean, it's been cool to see him succeed. It's just as we look at the Thunder as legitimate title contenders now, he and Waiters are the two factors where I'm not necessarily ready to trust them.
I'm with you, but then I had to go to this surreal universe known as Chesapeake Energy Arena, and I saw it with my own eyes, Andrew.
You were on the ground at the Boot Barn, and you were converted. I totally get it.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm fully bought in, but boy, this team is really good at home. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, and we can do it.
When you look at the whole series, I think for me, what's been most impressive is that every time, even when you go back to game one, every time the Warriors look like they're about to pull away, and frankly, against every other team in the NBA, the Warriors would pull away, but the Thunder just sort of keep coming, and they don't even blink. When the Warriors go on one of those runs where they go up 9 or 11, it's like the Thunder are completely unfazed. And that's why I don't need to tell Warriors fans to be freaked out after the last week, but that's why I would be concerned if I were a Golden State fan, because it basically, this is like the Thunder are just not scared.
100%. I mean, if any team has that quote unquote championship resolve right now, it's them. And it's not really close for second.
It's wild too, because we were coming into this series expecting them coming into the playoffs, certainly, we expected the Thunder to basically fall apart in crunch time, because that's what they did all year. That's been their story for the past couple of years, along with injuries. And now I like something changed in that Spurs series. And I'm mad because I said this on the pod, like three pods ago, saying basically that like they found something different. And that's why I wanted to pick the Thunder, and I didn't have the heart to do it, but yeah. I really think there was a shift there where they broke through and are now, they now fear nothing.
Yeah, no, I feel terribly for you because I was trying to goad you into making that pick because you really wanted to make the pick and you should have made the pick. And it's looking really good. I mean, Thunder in six looks fantastic at this point. And you could even hear it from the Warriors, though, before game six or I guess after game five. Like, they have an immense amount of respect for how good Oklahoma City is at home. And there was a more than an appropriate level of fear in terms of going back to that building.
So I wanted to ask you, do you think... So I was watching last night, and obviously the Warriors sort of got their groove back a little bit. But in game four, especially, like, I think part of what made the Warriors so good was that they were just like one of the most arrogant teams we've ever seen. And I feel like that kind of disappeared against the Thunder over the past week.
Well, yeah, the arrogance is coming from, or the quote unquote arrogance is coming from Draymond Green, and he disappeared. I mean, this guy is so far off the map.
But he was Steph too. It's like Steph has taken some of the most reckless, ridiculous pull-ups over the last like 9 months, pulling up from 26, 27 feet, and now he's not really doing that. And I think that changes their offense as well.
Yeah, well, I think that they just started thinking once they started getting into these holes, and now all of a sudden he's a little bit more reluctant to take some of those crazy shots that could, you know, draw some criticism, especially from Kerr. I mean, Kerr gets on him about those shots. He really wants him to run the offense. So I think that might be part of it. But to me, the bigger problems in game three and game four was Draymond Green. I mean, he said that he was basically on a different planet. That was his phrase that he used after game five. And it was so bad, he's calling Matt Barnes, Glenn Big Baby Davis, and Nate Robinson for advice.
I laughed out loud when I saw that note last night.
Okay,
because
so
you couldn't pick three crazier players in the NBA to call on for counsel.
That's exactly right. What would you call them? Like, what circumstance in your life, personal or professional, would you be like, I really need to call Matt Barnes, Nate Robinson, and Big Baby Davis right now?
And don't forget, he also talked to Kobe. It was like the four horsemen just NBA psychotics.
Yeah, the Mount Rushmore of human psychology, those guys. But to me, that was the difference because he did not look like himself. Kevin Durant completely took him out of the game.
Absolutely. I mean, well, and the other thing we talked about coming in this series was I was saying that Draymond, because against the Blazers, Draymond looked like a top 10, top five. On the pod, I said top five. That was overstating it. But he definitely looked like a top 10 type player against the Blazers. And I thought that he would have that kind of impact in this series and put Steph and Klay over the top against Russ and KD. But it was shocking to see how, I mean, because I think you could see him stuck in his own head. Like even just some of the decisions he was making were just kind of baffling. It was like watching LeBron in the 2011 finals.
Yeah, it was really bad. And I thought he was better in game five, but he wasn't all the way better. So I think if you're looking for a warning sign, if you're a Warriors fan, like heading into game six, it's like, uh-oh, did he really turn this corner or did he just kind of come up for air a little bit and there's going to be more trouble waiting?
Do you think that the Thunder have exposed him a little bit and just in terms of his limitations? Because I don't know if the way he's built, I don't know if he can really deal with guys like Durant and Steven Adams.
I'm not going to use the word expose. I don't think that's the case. I just think Kevin Durant is really freaking good. I think that's really what it boils down to. And I think, I mean, there's not that many guys like him in the league. I think Draymond, you can get by using him against Steven Adams. If there was no Durant in the picture, I think that's a fine matchup. I think Draymond handles physical centers on a regular basis. So if they needed to go that route on a team that, you know, had Adams and Ibaka as the starting front line or something like that, he'd be fine.
I just wonder if he struggles more with the hybrid type players like Durant and Giannis and LeBron, who are quick enough to stay with him and big enough to sort of give him trouble with length. And granted, we're talking, I just listed three of the most freakish athletes in all of sports. So that's still like no shots at Draymond if he can't deal with like super freaks.
I think Draymond's kryptonite is 18 feet of wingspan for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's why even he struggled in the first half last night and sort of got it going more in the second half, and started to look like the Draymond Green we watched all year. But I think no matter what, and I was just flat wrong about this, no matter what, he's going to struggle in this series because he just doesn't match up as well with Durant.
Yeah, let's give him credit and Bogut credit, though, for really holding down the defensive paint. They did an unbelievable job protecting the basket last night. I had a stat I put out there. It was like in the first four games, Oklahoma City averaged more than 20 makes in the basket area in each of those four games. And then last night, they only had eight, and they shot like 33% in the basket area. So I think Draymond had four blocks. I think Bogut had two. So he was at least back to normal in terms of kind of handling things inside and not getting overwhelmed by size and speed and power, which was sort of the issue in Oklahoma City. And I guess part of that is Adams' foul trouble for sure. Yeah. But I think another part of it was those guys are at home and they're playing a lot better there.
Right. So big picture with Draymond, I have has the last week or two been represented sort of a shift in the way he is looked at in the NBA?
Well, by his peers or by the media?
Well, by you. let's keep it simple. I don't know.
Yeah.
I still love Draymond and have for the past couple of years, but I now more than ever, I understand people who are sort of just sick of his shtick.
Yeah, it doesn't really bother me because, you know, I can always just go back to the numbers and find out all these ways that he's amazing. So I just kind of get over that. I do understand where people are coming from on that. The reason why I asked about his peers is because I think Westbrook, again, kind of spoke for a lot of people where he just kind of comes out and says, yeah, it's intentional. You know, he meant to kick him. And Westbrook's the kind of person who has enough credibility and, you know, he's done enough in the league where he can say that and no one's going to kind of push back on him.
So did you think it was intentional?
Ultimately, I did not. I was just, kind of inconclusive on it. The fact that he continues to do it and he had done it previously, I don't know if that works in his favor or works against him.
Right.
So I thought the Thunder handled that situation beautifully, though. And I did like that Westbrook kind of called him out because I think it was much like the situation with Steph Curry's defense, where these guys are kind of giving voice to some of the internal thoughts around the league, and they're doing it in a public way.
Yeah, I can't decide exactly how I feel about whether it was intentional. I mean, he should have the body control to not kick someone in the balls. But at the same time, I think that probably the more accurate take is that he intentionally plays in a way that will harm people.
He's a high risk player.
Yeah. Like, and you see people I've played pickup with people who are like swinging their elbows all over the place. And so when they elbow someone in the face, it's not they technically didn't mean to do that, but they've also been playing like that the entire game. And that's how Draymond is. I mean, he's not necessarily looking to connect every time, but he's clearly playing in a way that puts other people at risk.
Well, so when you're playing in the Zeke Freak tournament this weekend, I mean, you
the Zeke end.
Oh, sorry, my fault. I mean, if you have your pick of guys and Draymond's one of the guys, you're taking him basically first, right? I mean, he's not slipping very far. And to me, that's kind of always one of the easiest ways to tell, if you've reached the point of no return with a guy like, you
that's
know,
true.
His antics are too much. Like if you would take him quickly without hesitation and you'd want to ride with him during an important summer's, you know, Seattle tournament or the NBA finals, either way you want him on your team. And I think, you know, that's why I'm willing to kind of give him a pass on it. I also think though that he should be under total scrutiny here, you know, not only in the game five that just finished, but in game six as well. I mean,
it's not as fun to watch him now because now I'm worried that like, He's gonna cross a line, and I mean he did it again last night. I think he kicked someone in the face, but again, completely by accident, and it was not nearly as bad as the Steven Adams thing. But I worry about him getting suspended and then just sort of ruining the series.
Yeah, it's almost like he has restless leg syndrome.
Yeah, well, and it's like watching Bradley Beal. Like every time I watch Beal, I'm like, oh, please don't get hurt, please don't get hurt. And Draymond, I'm just like, please don't lose your mind, please don't lose your mind. And it's a little bit stressful.
Oh, I agree. But my point there was just like, he's burned up his second chance, right? Like we gave him the pass on the kick.
He's on like triple secret probation right now.
Okay, good. We're on the same page there.
Yeah. And I like Draymond. I worry that he's become a little bit overexposed now, whereas last year he was the guy who was funnier than anyone on the Warriors and talk trash. And he had sort of an underdog story and everyone could root for him. And now he's like leaned into that image to the point where I think I totally get it if people are sick of him.
Well, and I think he's set up to be one of the fall guys here if they lose in game six, because I mean, think about all the things he's kind of added to his play. You know, he's got the playoff diary. He's making these predictions against Portland, you know, basically guaranteeing victories. He's out in front on storyline after storyline. He's in the middle of this, kit controversy. He gets a pass from the league office, so that kind of makes him look like the superstar. All of these things kind of add up together to further some of the resentment that you're talking about. So if they do lose in six, I think he's going to, you know, really take it on the chin from a lot of critics. To me, I mean, first of all, let's give the Thunder credit. They're playing unbelievably well. They've got.
I was going to say, we should talk about how good the Thunder have been, because that has been just as crazy. I mean, I think a lot of people have talked to me about this series and have been like, well, like game three and game four were blowouts. Like it wasn't actually that great. But both of those games, I have been sort of speechless at the end of both of them, because I'm basically just blown away by how far this Thunder team has come in the span of like 3 weeks.
Well, yeah, if we go back to the fall, I mean, the number one storyline I had for them was, can they find the functional five-man group? You know, you're going to build around, you know, Durant and Westbrook, obviously, probably Ibaka. Can you find a five-man lineup that works, right? And
yeah.
Billy Donovan finds that group in San Antonio, and it involves Kanter and Adams, which basically nobody saw coming. And then very quickly in games one and two, he just decides to completely scrap that group and find another group. And he's doing this with not a great bench. I mean, they don't have a lot to work with. And then he summons up this smaller ball lineup with KD at the four, Ibaka at the five, you know, Waiters plugged in to give you a little bit more playmaking on the perimeter. And all of a sudden that lineup just runs the Warriors small ball lineup off the court. I mean, that's just almost incomprehensible. A team that's basically playing eight guys in the postseason and had all these questions about chemistry and fit and everything else coming into the season has found two separate five-man lineups that have destroyed two of the best, you know, 10 or 15 teams regular season record-wise in NBA history. It's nuts, man.
How much credit do you give Billy Donovan?
Oh, a ton. I mean, you got to. He was so quick to pull Kanter out early in that series. And if you think about that, like, Kanter's a max guy. He's already sacrificed to not take a starting lineup spot. He's already playing in Oklahoma City where, you know, sometimes guys don't necessarily want to play. He's already, you know, taking a lot of beating for his defense, and he's not getting maybe as many touches as he would get a lot of other places. And now you're telling him, hey, congratulations on the best moment of your career. You were a huge game-changing presence against the San Antonio Spurs. You're finally building some positive momentum. Now I'm going to sit your ass down and you can watch everybody else
it's
play.
It's definitely a move that Scott Brooks would not have made.
Oh, and it's a big time juice move, you know? That says that
Wizards, by the way.
Yeah, right. But that's a big time juice move. That says that he's got control of the locker room. Everybody's on board. They believe in him and the players buy in, you know? And Kanter's been there when he's called on him, you know, in brief moments. But not every coach could pull that, and not every coach would have the vision to pull that off. And so, yeah, I give him a lot of credit.
Yeah, and I mean, the reason I ask is because part of me watching the Spurs series, and again watching this Warriors series, you look at OKC right now, and they just look so much bigger and faster than either team. And I mean, basketball may not be as complicated as we make it sometimes. Like, these guys are just better athletes. And with Durant, when Durant and Russ are executing like this, like, they're going to be very difficult for anyone to beat.
Well, I think the other thing
like
about
the matchups are going to be lopsided regardless.
For sure. I mean, that's always been the story. Like, they can't do it on 2-on-5. They just need a little bit more extra help, and they finally kind of found the right help. And the other thing that
Adams and Ibaka came back to life this series, which has been great.
For sure. They've carved out really nice roles for those guys, and they're capable of doing what they're being asked, which is perfect. I think the other aspect that's helped them is the blowouts that you've mentioned. Like, they haven't got into that super grinded out, like, last 2 minute situation. Yes. And they did get into that a little bit in game 5, and it didn't go great for them, although Golden State almost gave it away. But, you know, Durant has the key turnover with like 90 seconds left. Steph picks his pocket. And so when the game hasn't slowed down, that's when the athleticism really shows through, right? And that's why Oklahoma City is just trying to run it down Golden State's throat in games 3 and 4, and it worked to perfection. And then you don't even have to worry about the clutch time issues because you're sitting over on the bench laughing because you're up by 25.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's another thing that would worry me if I'm a Warriors fan, is that, like, the same way that the Thunder have been able to respond every time the Warriors start to, like, crank it up and push the things to double digits, that's been the inverse has been true with Golden State. They basically haven't had an answer when the Thunder turn into a freight train and Russ is going 150 miles an hour down the court. It gets out of hand pretty quickly. And that's, I mean, certainly game 6 can't go any worse than games 3 and 4. So that at least they've got that going for them.
Famous last words. I'm not totally bought into that.
Last night, can we tell the listeners that we were expecting this to be the end of the series?
Well, I went back and forth. So right after game 4, I was like, oh God, it's over. And I was,
you emailed me and were like, let's do a finals preview on Friday.
So I was wringing my hands because I had already bought a plane ticket back to Oklahoma City. So that meant I was either going to have to, like, sit in a hotel room with no games to cover for like a week, or I was going to have to try to go through the whole change thing. So it was going to be a huge hassle, right? But I actually,
more time for the Banjo Museum.
Yeah, I could be a season ticket holder, but I go back, I wake up on Thursday morning, and it just, like, struck me, and I was like, the Warriors are going to win game 5. I'm going back to Oklahoma for game 6. It's just how it's going to be.
And right.
Here was my logic. I was like, well, Kerr's just going to trust the death lineup. He's going to go small. They're going to make tons and tons of threes. Steph's going to get it going early, and it's just going to be one of those signature Warriors performances where they coast to the finish.
Because coming into yesterday's game, I had a feeling that the Warriors were going to get a lot of calls.
I didn't think about that. I just thought that they were going to be too much because, you know, they were going to finally unlock the 3-point magic that's kind of been gone for a few games. And instead, it wasn't that at all. It was completely the opposite. I mean, they won, but they won by going big. They won by kind of biding their time until Steph could kind of go off late.
And Steph was attacking the rim, too, more than we've seen him throughout the past few games.
Absolutely. And that was a key adjustment, no doubt about it, because they have to get him consistent scoring, free throw line, you know, high percentage looks around the basket. They need that stuff. But yeah, it was kind of funny. The first 7 fouls of the game went against the Thunder.
Right. I don't know, man. I mean, I don't think, again, we've been over this. I don't think Adam Silver's NBA is as shady as the David Stern regime that we grew up with. But still, it was I was not terribly surprised to see things tilt in Golden State's favor as far as the fouls last night.
Yeah, I mean, the Adams thing was really big because that lets Bogut get off
That's
and
huge.
Get his confidence. And
Steven Adams has been a monster over the last 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Well, this was another one of my theories. I was thinking about just when we do podcasts, like after every sentence, just saying mate, because that's what basically.
I've thought about that, too. It makes him twice as popular just by adding mate to everything he says.
It's like a guaranteed retweet boost on every comment that he has. And also the media can't stop laughing every time he says anything as long as he says mate. It's like this unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm fine, mate.
It's a great life hack.
I almost added a cup, mate. Seriously. He's the best. He is the best. And he has been so good that I think after whether they win or lose this series, it changes the way we think about the Thunder over the next couple of years, because he's now almost at like a star level where you have to factor him into their future.
You want to hear a hilarious joke?
Yes.
You think Kevin Durant will sign with the Lakers?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
This is what I'm saying though, and that's to your point. I mean, if you have the table set and you know Westbrook's always locked in, and you can tell their chemistry from these press conferences, just kind of, you know, from how they're conducting themselves, how they're playing together on the court, you know, you've got that rock solid center with Steven Adams. You might eventually have to trade Ibaka depending on how things go with that. But you're probably going to bring back Waiters. He seems like he likes it there. He's found a role.
It's a great mix.
Robertson, you can expect him to be back. I mean, a lot of these role guys are going to be willing to stick around if the team's a contender. We've seen that kind of stuff before, either with the Heat or with, you know, the Cavaliers now or whatever. Or even the Warriors bringing back guys like Barbosa year after year, right? I mean, you can kind of see this shaping up where the pitch to Kevin is, look, man, like, you guys just rolled through Golden State, made it to the finals potentially. You know, why can't we do this again next year? Everybody's young. Why can't you do it the year after that? You know, they've got Cantor under contract too. You just go right down the list. I mean, the table is kind of set. I don't know where he's going to get a better situation than that.
Well, and what's wild is that you say you can kind of see this shaping up, but a month ago, none of us could see this shaping up because Adams was good all year, but he was not this. He's turned into a completely different beast over the past few weeks. And I mean, Cantor also came through when I think a lot of people, myself certainly included, expected him to get exposed. The Spurs couldn't punish him. I mean, the whole supporting cast has just hit a completely different level.
Yeah, I think the way to put it is that previously, that situation looked like a great backup. Like, if nothing else materialized, at least it was familiar and at least there were some pieces in place. Now it looks potentially like the best situation out there, period.
Yeah.
Which is really crazy to say. And I'm saying that with the caveat of, like, the number of guys Golden State would have to lose to bring Durant in. And I think we can kill the Durant to Warriors rumors too if KD's up there taking shots at taking shots at Steph's defense.
Yeah, absolutely. So along those lines, one other Thunder thought that I have had is watching them last night, as crazy as the past few weeks have been, I still think that they rise or fall depending on Russ.
I don't know. I can look at it both ways. I've always kind of been of the opinion that of the guys who's going to bring it energy wise more often than not, it's always Westbrook. I mean, he just, every single game he's giving you something. So it's sort of like, if KD's fully engaged, then they're very, very difficult to beat, if not borderline impossible.
KD was unbelievable last night. Yeah. He's the reason that it was nearly, I mean, the fact that they almost made that close at the end, if that Durant three had fallen in the final minute, like, it was anybody's game.
So you can kind of go either way. I mean, I'm not sure that it matters which one's more important or which one's more impactful, or, you know, who's more consistent or whatever. I just think that they're a beast now. Every game, especially in the postseason, they're playing to the level where you have to account for both of them potentially going for a 40 and a triple double. Basically any night.
I just watch them, and Durant is constantly a threat, and sometimes Russ can push too hard. I mean, last night he started 1 of 8, and then there were some bad turnovers in the second half. And he finished with 30 and 8, or I forget his exact numbers, but his numbers didn't really do justice. I felt like his decision making was a little bit off last night, and that's what makes them sort of mortal.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the greatest night, and he started really slow finishing-wise, so I think he was like 1 of 9 or 1 of 10 to start, something like that. He was, you know, really struggling around the basket, and that was, you know, credit to Green and credit to Boga, like we mentioned earlier. Are you worried? I guess, like, in the past, like in previous years, I'd be like, oh boy, Westbrook had a bad game. That means, like, this is all going to fall apart for them. Instead, I'm just kind of thinking, like, oh yeah, Westbrook's going home for game 6. He's probably going to have, you know, 25, 8, and 8 by halftime. And, you know, that's going to be it.
Yeah. And I'm not worried. And it's strange to I don't know, man. We're in a whole different category now.
It's really weird, but I mean,
because he's really put it together to the point where, like, anyone who's still skeptical, I mean, I don't know what to tell you after the way they played those first four games. I mean, I'm not saying I guarantee a Thunder victory. In fact, we'll get to this when we pick the series, but I don't think it'll be on Russ. Whereas coming into the playoffs, I really did look at him as sort of the weak link that was going to be their undoing. And he's just responded over and over again with big shots. I mean, he's a terrible 3-point shooter who still has, he's hit so many big threes over the past month.
Yeah. He's getting his Dwayne Wade on.
It's wild.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I can't wait to hear what Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook have to say about Kyrie's defense.
So I guess we should just talk. First of all, apologies to anyone who wanted to hear about Mike D'Antoni coaching the Rockets or David Fizdale taking over with the Grizzlies or the Cavs and Raptors. I think we're done. I think we've spent a total of 90 seconds on the Cavs Raptors series.
One thought on that. No, it was perfect because we were almost going to have to do a mea culpa after the game four where it was like, okay, Raptors, we're so sorry.
I was pretty upset.
I was like, well, I was preparing my apology to Toronto, et cetera, et cetera. And then they just come out and get waxed in game five. Yeah, and it's like, thank you.
Even if they had made it close, we still would have had to do a mea culpa if it had been like a 10-point game. But the 40-point blowout really confirmed what we had assumed all along.
Well, what did you think about this story about Corey Joseph, I think Damari Carroll at the casino at 2 a.m. in Cleveland? Did you see that?
I did see that. I also saw it's funny how these stories work now. There were like 500 different people came forward to say that this is totally fine and this is their right and we shouldn't get upset. Which is correct, but I didn't really see anybody saying that this is like irresponsible and that they're letting their team down or anything. And it was like everybody was reacting to an opinion that wasn't really there.
Yeah, and it was after a game, you know, that wasn't even close. So it's like, was that really the difference?
Wait, it was after the game?
No, I thought it happened before the game, but then the reaction came out after, you know what I mean?
So
everybody's freaking out over a completely inconsequential like walk.
Right. Through, yeah. Well, it was the other thing I liked is like you could totally I would understand the scrutiny if it was like a 3-point game.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
40-point loss. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think they were just being realistic, just hanging out at the casino.
Yeah, and Cleveland, you know, there's not a lot down there, and there's, you know, it's right there.
Exactly. There's not a lot of attractions. The casino's right in the hotel. Have you ever been to that casino?
I haven't, but I know where it is, and I kind of get it. I mean, who knows? That they could have been going out for food or anything. You know, it's just kind of right there.
I like casinos, but when I went to that, I found out that Dan Gilbert was involved, and I did not want to spend money and make Dan Gilbert any richer.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird vibe in downtown Cleveland. I'm not going to lie. It just kind of makes me uncomfortable. But
I like Cleveland. I do like Cleveland. There's a lot of unhealthy food and fun people. So two things that are big selling points for me. So I would probably actually like Oklahoma City too.
You're not getting the vegetable plate though.
Yeah, but yes. So apologies to anyone who expected anything other than Thunder Warriors. We'll talk about regular NBA news on Tuesday. Including Markieff Morris got arrested trying to bring weed through a Philadelphia airport, which was great. Good sign for the Wizards. Call back to the Damon Stoudemire Jailblazers era.
Yeah, that's fantastic. We probably just thought he had pre-check, so it was cool too.
Yeah, I don't even know how that works. But so let's finish up with game six. What's your prediction? It certainly sounds like you've written the Thunder into the finals.
I'm not going to go that far, but the number of things that have to go right for Golden State to win game six, it's a long list, right? Like Draymond needs to be back in full force. Steph needs to be the number one offensive player on the court. Bogut needs to have another big game where he's been up and down all playoffs, right? And
yeah, do you think he can do that? Because I think if Bogut plays well and plays even close to what he was last night, that changes things for them.
I have a hard time believing it. That's why my prediction for game five was that they would go small, because I thought they would just ditch him. That's obviously right. It went the other way. But he's been that shaky where you almost had to kind of think about it. And I wonder how much leash do you give him? Like, if he doesn't come out amazing in the first quarter like he did in game five, if Adams is kind of having his way like he did in games three and four, then what do you do? I'm not sure. And then the other thing, too, is they just can't have the turnovers on the road. And for whatever reason, they were able to get those under control in game five. But that's really what their death was in games three and four, you know, especially in game four when Steph and Draymond are combining for 12 turnovers. Give me a break. You're never going to beat the Thunder if you're doing that.
Yeah. So
that's a long list of big issues, and I'm not convinced they're going to be able to solve any of them. We talked about the Thunder's focus. I think they're going to be able to get, you know, some of these guys who no-showed in game five are going to step up a little bit. And if I have to trust, you know, one pair of stars at this point, whether it's KD and Russ or, you know, Curry or Draymond, I just trust KD and Russ more.
Yeah, it's crazy that we're there after watching them through the regular season this year. They didn't have it. And especially against good teams. And now I completely agree with you that I trust KD and Russ more. And I think one of the other things that we talked about coming into this series, and we were both wrong, but we said that the team with the bigger margin for error has to be favored. And the Thunder seem to have a much bigger margin for error right now.
Yeah, I agree. Well, this is how quickly it's changed for the Thunder. On March 3rd, they collapse against the Clippers, 22-point lead given back. And I was so disgusted at that game that I...
I remember talking to you afterwards, yeah.
That I wrote that they choked. You know, I came out and just said, they choked. I mean, and yeah. I was so unbelievably angry. March 3rd, and today is May 27th. So less than 3 months later, this team that's choking against the Clippers, known chokers themselves, is now on the brink of the NBA Finals after putting away potentially... You know, the league's number one, you know, clutch team, crunch time team with the Golden State Warriors. It's crazy.
Yes. And I'm not quite ready to rejoice yet as someone who's loved KD for the last like 8 years. But if they could pull this off, it's going to be as impressive as anything I've probably ever seen in the playoffs. I mean, the Spurs, like the Thunder made them look ordinary, but they were just almost as dominant as the Warriors this year.
Oh, and absolutely.
To beat these teams back to back is just out of control.
Well, so I was looking at some of the results for like the best teams in NBA history and like what ends up happening to them. So keep in mind that there's only been 19 teams in NBA history to win 65 games, right?
Yeah.
14 of those 19 have won the title. Right. Yeah. And so two of those potentially who will lose the title are going to be the Warriors and the Spurs, and the Thunder are going to have knocked off both of them. It's like, yeah, they're almost responsible for more like carnage than the entire rest of the NBA history put together when you're talking about like the all time great teams. And the same thing goes for teams that have like a +9 point differential. You know, almost all of those have been champions. The Spurs and Warriors are both in that group. They're actually both +10. And it's possible that the Thunder knock off both those teams. I mean, it's just mind boggling. And, you know, if they go on to win the title, then you got to put them in that conversation of like craziest, you know, best playoff runs, most impressive playoff runs. I mean, they're going to be in that mix.
Are you familiar with the 27 club?
No.
LeBron James was 27 when he won his first title.
Yeah.
I believe MJ was too. Steph was as well. Guess how old Russ and KD are.
Yeah, that's a good time to be peaking, right?
It's pretty wild. However, can I make a heel turn right now?
Oh, are you going to predict a Warriors comeback? Holy crap.
So,
wait, we waited 50 minutes for you to bury this lead?
Let me be honest with you. I would love to watch the Thunder in the finals. I really would. However... As I've said, I'm a full-on Steph believer, And I also, earlier this week, man, I mean, I've got it on G-Chat record with Matt Dollinger. I said, coming into game four, I was like, the Thunder are going to win tonight and then go up 3-1 and people are going to freak out and the Warriors will come back and win the series. Now, after game four, after the like destruction, scorched earth performance that we saw from Russ and KD, I began to rethink that. However, I mean, I think I still, I have to stick with it now.
Well, this to me, I'm going to call you out. This to me seems like reverse jinx. I think what you're trying to do is you want to see Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook in the finals so bad. You're a little nervous it might not happen. So you're hedging and you're betting against yourself so that you win either way.
That's actually exactly how I feel because I think that's one of the reasons I like these playoffs so much is that if the Warriors came back from this, it would be an incredible story. If the Thunder can finish this and go on and win a title, it would be just as incredible. And then we've still got LeBron in the East and a Cavs team that is suddenly fun and likable and playing well for the first time all year, pretty much. And if they win, I would not be upset either. So this is like, we've got three deserving champions. And this is why when people like Tracy McGrady talk about the NBA being watered down, like they're just full of shit. I mean, no offense, but this is just like Jordan didn't have competition like this in the 90s. Like there are three teams that could win the title in a lot of different eras.
Okay, so let me ask you this. I went down my list of things that have to go right for the Warriors. When you're sitting from the paranoid person who wants to see the Thunder make the finals chair, what is it that scares you the most? Like, what are you nervous for in game six?
I think one of the things that the Warriors have yet to put together a completely dominant game. I mean, we saw it a little bit in the second half of game two, but basically we're still waiting for them to be at their 73 win best. And a lot of people think that's good, that it's just gone and they don't have the energy and it's a bad matchup. And that may be true, in which case the Thunder will probably win game six, but I wouldn't write them off so easily. I mean, Steph is still barely human and could go out and just go nuts on Saturday night.
So basically it boils down to Steph rising up above is sort of what we're looking at.
Yeah. And I mean, it's weird to me how quickly everyone has been willing to sort of bet against him after watching him just lay waste to the entire league for 2 years.
Well, he hasn't looked right. I think we can agree. I mean, I'm not sure I want to get into the percentage game of, is he 70% like, you know, Yahoo reported or is he 91% like, you know, Steve Kerr jokes. Or whatever else. But he hasn't looked right. I mean, he's had bursts here and there. He had a nice fourth quarter again last night. He had that great third quarter in game
totally,
two.
Totally. Even last night, he didn't look 100%. And I think one of the things that bugs me is that he is probably still hurt. But I also think that dealing with the Thunder and dealing with Westbrook specifically has a lot to do with why he looks exhausted in all of these games. And it's kind of bums me out that the conversation has been 90% about his injury and the 70% Woj quote, when a lot of it is just the Thunder are awesome and would wear anybody out.
Well, full credit to Durant and Westbrook for bringing it back to that point again in their press conference.
Exactly. I mean, now we're back,
which is fantastic. Yeah.
But so it doesn't freak you out at all that there's this much pro Thunder. Basically, it doesn't freak you. The Thunder optimism doesn't make you paranoid at all.
I mean, a little bit, I guess. I go back to some of the things that were frustrating me about the Warriors earlier in this playoffs. You know, I thought they were kind of taking things for granted. I thought they had nights where they needed to come out with full intensity and they didn't.
Yeah,
and
the lazy star student.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And So this is what happens if you're the lazy star student, right? You know, if you rush through a test and you miss one, and the diligent student who stays focused and goes through the entire thing and double checks all their answers and everything else doesn't miss any, then you get sent home. And that's sort of how I see this.
I love that Westbrook has become the diligent student.
Well, yeah,
this is amazing.
But in this series, hasn't he? I understand he's been up and down too, but I think his ups have been higher than Curry's ups. And yeah. I think his downs have been also higher than Curry's downs. Like, I don't think he's had those long stretches of just, you know, ineffectiveness, which Curry had. I mean, when Steve Kerr's coming out and saying Steph Curry had a lousy night, like, that's bad.
Right.
You know?
But so Russ is still gambling a lot on defense, and the Thunder have gotten, even in those games in Oklahoma City, they were getting open shots. And if, as soon as those shots start to fall, suddenly it's harder for the Thunder to get back and go on fast breaks, which is like a huge part of what makes Westbrook so scary and difficult to deal with. And I'm just saying, it would not be that inconceivable for the tide to really turn on Saturday night.
Well, look, they have to win game six. You don't want any bit part of a game seven at Oracle if you're the Thunder. And I think if somehow Golden State does pull this game six out, then, you know, I'm running back the other direction on it as well.
Yeah, that's my point, is we've all been flip-flopping throughout this series, and we maybe due for another flip-flop.
Oh, it could happen. I hope it happens, because I picked Warriors in seven. So yeah, I'll look like a genius if it goes Warriors in seven, but of course I've changed my mind on this series like four times in the middle of the series, so you just really never know.
Yeah, I can't wait for Saturday. I'll be watching with a bunch of Seattle fans who are rooting for nothing but pain for Oklahoma City. I am going to be deeply conflicted, as I've been throughout this series. I don't know, man. It should be good.
Isn't there a part of you that kind of wants to see the Warriors fail?
Yes. I mean, that's definitely part of what made games three and four so fascinating, is it was just like, wow, this, the last 7 months of everything that we thought we knew about basketball is now, and where basketball is going, and the revolution. And I mean, certainly watching Joe Lacob look like a fool after that New York Times interview is fairly satisfying for everyone. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of that. And again, watching the Thunder come together just as everyone was counting them out is another story that's impossible not to love. I mean, they're so much fun right now.
Now you've got me nervous about the stories that are going to be written about Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook if they lose this series. Like,
I know.
Like, remember when LeBron went into hiding after he lost the finals to the Mavericks for like, what was it, a week or 2 weeks where he didn't leave his house? Like, we might not hear from these guys for like 3 years.
I know. That's all I'm saying is proceed with caution. So what's your flight situation to Oklahoma City?
Oh, crap. Well, I mean, we'll see how it goes. I'm supposed to get in there super late tonight. The rental car center at the airport's bigger than the actual airport, which is always an interesting sign. So yeah, I'm supposed to get in there about midnight, hopefully, knock on wood.
Okay.
And you know, that sets up, like you said, a great game six, and then maybe a quick turnaround here for game seven. What's interesting for these guys though, is there's not going to be a lot of time if it goes seven, or even if it goes six, really, there's not a ton of time before the finals start. Like, the finals are right here, basically.
I know. Yeah. And I'm definitely covering the Cleveland games, but it all swings on this series as to when I travel. So we'll see. A lot of things are up in the air right now. It's the Zeke end. We've got game six Saturday. Big things are happening.
Well, if Isaiah Thomas brings up his placement in NBA rank from last year, or no, sorry, we call ours top 100. If he brings up his placement in the top 100, you know, tell him that we do look at both sides of the basketball. Like, that's part of it.
Yeah, dude, I'll definitely defend your honor. Okay. All right. Well, yo, we'll catch up on Tuesday and recap the madness and preview the finals. And until then, good luck in Oklahoma City. I hope you get a better meal than you found at the Cracker Barrel. And we'll talk soon.
All right, man.
Thanks for tuning in for another episode of Open Floor. You can follow Andrew Sharp on Twitter at Andrew Sharp and Ben Golliver at Ben Golliver. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice. And you can hear the whole SI network at si.com/podcasts.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.